The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And I left myself saying, well, this sounds very Jalen Hurts-ish. Like, that's who he is. Like, he's just a quirky guy. He doesn't say anything. He has no personality. Could he have answered it better? Absolutely. But when has he ever answered a question that makes you say, man, that's a great answer?
Mike Gill is back. Let's get Mike Gill up. Mike, you with us, man?
You tell me. Sure. I could hear you guys last time.
Yeah.
We got you now, Mike.
I think this was a case of my laptop has not been turned on in quite some time, and it needed a little time to, like, catch up on everything.
Laptop lag. The laptop's dragged along.
The laptop did not make the trip, right?
No, it did not. When I got home, both laptops were sitting unplugged in and dead. So when I woke up this morning, they were both dead, and I think I got this one going. We're good.
All right. How was the trip? Let's get that out. How exciting was it to see the Phillies in London?
I would say, and I don't know how to categorize this. Maybe people can help. The difference between like a sporting event and a game, okay? As an event, it was one of the top three sports events I've ever been to. It was so cool. It was such a great atmosphere. It was so well done. I've been to great games. I don't know how that, like, you know, like Roy Halladay throwing a no-hitter in the playoffs. I was there. That's a game that was better. But as an event in itself, they knocked it out of the park with this thing. It's a shame because nobody in London, none of the locals, they had no idea that this thing's even there. And that's what you're like these games at, like, the NFL in Brazil and Germany. And, you know, I think they don't even know that the game's there. Like, the locals have no idea that the game is there. There's such a small presence in those cities.
Yeah. I do think.
No, they don't know baseball, but they didn't even know, everybody you would run into. What are you doing here? What are you visiting? What brings you to London? Oh, we're here for the baseball game. Baseball game? Well, what are you talking about? Like, they had no idea that this game was there. So I don't know how, like, that helps expand your footprint if you're going to a place that has no idea that you're there. Now, the NFL might do a better job with it. I think the NFL games do have a better presence from the locals. That didn't take away the time that I had because there were just so many Phillies fans there. That's what made it such a cool, unique thing is that this thing and just took over – whatever area they could find.
Now, you didn't hang out at Passyunk Avenue, tell me, the whole time. Because
I was there the night that Rob Thompson paid the bar tab.
Nice. Nice job by Rob. Our buddy Jeff Carmike said, you know, and I agree with him wholeheartedly. So I want to get your thought. If you're going to London, I don't want to go to McDonald's or the Billy Bar. I want to see London. And that's how I kind of look at it. But
I understand that way. Like, I'm not going to McDonald's I'm not getting coffee at Starbucks. You know, I'll go to a local, like, little spot. The area that you could go walk through the graffiti tunnels and actually see something. It was situated in the middle of the graffiti tunnel. So the actual bar was kind of in an area that you want to go see. And it was cool. The way they had it set up in there, it was pretty cool. But I only went the one night for about an hour or so just to kind of see it, take a look at it. They got a picture of Nick Foles holding the trophy as a stained glass window. They've got Philly memorabilia everywhere. But I saw Speaking of the Eagles, the UK Phillies guy, he's like a rock star over there. But they do have the UK Eagles guy. His name's Liam, and he was with the UK Phillies guy hanging out all weekend. So I did see a little Eagles present. He wore the Kelly Green satin starter jacket to the Phillies game.
Yeah, I think everybody in London is named Liam, so no surprise there. But I'm glad you had a good time, even better. That you fought through the 10-hour jet lag. You were on yesterday, right? Already on your show. So
I was.
Mike's working hard. I don't know how much time you had to pay attention when you're in London. Always with the Eagles, it's always something. And I'm sure you've seen it by now. I'm sure you've talked about it. The Jalen Hurts comments, and he kind of left it open-ended, and it was a bunny, Mike. It was an easy question to answer. You could just, especially for a guy that's been around, he started whatever in the NFL. That's a layup for a 7-footer, and he stumbled through it. What did you make of it?
Yes, yeah, so I got home yesterday, Monday, and I saw all this hullabaloo about something that he said and that there's a disconnect and this could be the start of some trouble. And I'm thinking, all right, I got to listen to this. So I told my producer, what's the audio? Can you play this audio for me so that I can make a, you know, assessment myself? So he gets the bite and he plays it for me. And I left myself saying, well, this sounds very Jalen Hurts-ish. Like, that's who he is. Like, he's just a quirky guy. He doesn't say anything. He has no personality. Could he have answered it better? Absolutely. But when has he ever answered a question that makes you say, man, that's a great answer? Like, he gives you the same answer all the time, the straight line answer. Like, nothing that he says inspires anybody to be like, what a great quote this guy. I mean, when does he give a great quote that made you feel that the whole thing's on the same page? Never. He always feels like he is kind of on his own little island out there. Could you have interpreted as he could have done a better job? No Andy Reid pun there, but sure, he could have answered it better. But I think he just kind of looking at it like, I'm getting a question about this in June? Like, what are we doing here? But I don't know. I know it's a slow time of year for all out there, and I appreciate the grind of trying to find some material. But I thought this was a large stretch to try to make anything out of, other than Jalen Hurts just doesn't say all that much.
It's a good take. Good outside perspective from Gil, who flies in from London and takes a crap on it. I agree. I don't want to make too big of a deal of it, but I will say, I said to John at the top of the show, you're the leader of the football team. I don't care if you don't like Sirianni. I don't care if you hate him. I don't care if you want him fired. In that moment, when you're speaking publicly and everybody's making it, you know, making the topics about Sirianni, it's easy to say, Nick's doing a great job. We're all on the same page. We're all working toward the same goal. I just wish he said that. That's it.
Well, let me interject with this then. Does anybody feel that Jalen Hurts didn't want Nick Sirianni to be the coach? Because if that's the case, would Nick Sirianni be here?
Yeah.
I don't think Jalen has that
say. Fair point. Yeah. But I think it's...
Dana, you don't think Jalen Hurts could go to Howie and say, listen, can't coexist.
The quarterback's going to win.
Right, exactly.
We're talking about a front office, Mike, that fired Doug Peterson because they thought they were the reason they won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but they had a quarterback disconnect at that time. They didn't pay fresh money to be the guy who took them to the Super Bowl. They were in between of what the heck are we doing with our quarterback and where are we? This is a guy that took them to the Super Bowl and played pretty well last year. They paid him. I can't imagine saying, we want to go through what we just went through with Carson Wentz again. And have a disconnect between the coach and the quarterback. So I got to imagine Jalen Hurts had a voice in there to say, I love Coach Nick. I can play for Coach Nick. Because if not, we're not paying you $275 million to go through a season where we don't think you can tolerate the coach. That sounds asinine to me.
You're definitely
maybe
right.
I've been
that.
In London too long.
If that is true, and that's the way they're going into this, and we got trouble in Philly. I said this to John. If they're not on the same page, how good can the Eagles even be this year? So you make a good point. I just don't know if Jalen would have the ear of Jeffrey Lurie. I mean, he's the guy who deals with the head coaches. I don't know if Jeffrey Lurie would listen to that, whether Jalen,
power, if it comes down to it, you know, Mike's right. The $255 million quarterback is going to win always in every city when it comes to coach versus quarterback. But here's where I'll push back a little bit, Mike, and say, mm-hmm. I'm not going to say it's nothing. I don't think it's a big thing, but I think his comments sort of hid the bigger ones from Nick Sirianni, who basically confirmed, and Jalen Hurts confirmed as well, this is a completely new offense, and it's Kellen Moore's offense. And to your point about Jalen saying he never says anything, he occasionally says something. He's very intentional. That's my issue. When I asked him about being a sponge or versus taking some ownership of the offense, he took a turn. And he got that 95% out there pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because he wanted it out there because the offense struggled in the spring. And then you have Nick Sirianni basically admitting, and this is a bad thing for an offensive head coach in the NFL. You and I know, Mike, you're tethered to your quarterback if you're an offensive head coach. Brady and Belichick, Mahomes and Andy Reid, Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts. Nick said, I'm not there every day anymore. I'm not with him every minute of every second, every day. He basically untethered himself from the starting quarterback. That ain't good. That ain't a good setup. And that's where I've been from moment one when Jeffrey Lurie brought him back. I think this is a Jeffrey Lurie problem, not a Nick Sirianni problem.
Well, if that's the case, then there's more dysfunction at the top than we like to try to think. Because, again, you just went through a process where the coach was essentially on some thin ice, we would all imagine. Now, it never came out like that they were thinking about anything. They made it like, why would we even be addressing whether Nick's coming back or not? But I would have to think that all of that conversation is, Nick, is there a problem with you and Jalen? Jalen, is there a problem with you and Nick? If there's any hesitation, then you have a big issue. You can't bring Nick Sirianni back, or you have to try to figure out how to get rid of Jalen Hurts. You can't put them back together and start in June with this nonsense of, hey, did these guys even like each other? Because you had the opportunity to make a change way back when and didn't do it. So then if this is coming out to this point, which I don't know, again, maybe I'm jet lagged. I don't see a big, and I'm not saying that anybody who saw something there, I wasn't in the room. I can't hear the back and forth, the context of how the question was a little low. Who asked that? Martin?
Yeah, Martin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now the audio that when I got home, my producer gave me was, hey, he 95% of the offense. That was kind of like what I thought. All right. He's trying to say, listen, I'm not worried about this. I got a new coach over here who's giving me a brand new offense that I need to, it's 95% new. I've got to figure out how to learn this offense, which is another new offense for the guy, by the way. Me and Nick are over here. We're fine. We've been together for years. That's why we're still both here. If that's not the case, then I think what Xander said is correct. Then you have a problem when you have a disconnect between ownership, front office, coach.
Even know if disconnect is the right word here. And I've said this and I've written about this about Jeffrey, which I think, and I say all the time, I think Jeffrey's one of the best owners in the NFL. And I don't have to call him Mr. Lurie because I don't work for him. So Jeffrey is one of the best owners in the NFL. However, I do not think he understands his impact in that he likes to always say he's a question asker. Well, I can ask you a question, Mike, and I do all the time, and you ask me questions. Big deal, right? If I got $7.5 billion behind me and I'm your boss, those questions take on a different frame, a different mindset. If I say, hey, this isn't working well, this is a problem, that carries some weight. And my whole thing with Nick Sirianni is, from all indications, Jeffrey Lurie never ordered him to do anything. But I think Nick Sirianni is smart enough and political enough to understand if he walked into Jeffrey Lurie's offense after that game in Tampa and said, and it was a couple days because Jeffrey was out yacht shopping, so it took a couple days. But if he went in there and said, Mike Gill, hey, we're going to run it back with Brian Johnson, Alex Tanney. We won 29 to 32 games. We're going to figure it out. That would have went over like a lead balloon. And, you know, I don't think Jeffrey understands his question. It sets directions. And I don't think he understands that. So my point being, Nick Belde had to make changes to keep his job.
Right. I agree with that. I think Nick, but I agree that Nick was cognizant and smart enough to understand because he saw it happen to the previous regime. I can't go in banging my fist for my guys. Otherwise, I'm going to be on the street too.
Yes.
So I can conform here. And listen, I might not want to lose some of these guys, but there's other guys I'll be okay with. Like, I think Nick is something that is a little foreign to some people out there, is that you can have an opinion and like this. I can also know that I can change from this and do that and still be happy. Everybody feels like if it's not this and it has to be this, no, it only has to be this. No, it could be both, and I can do a good job with both. And I think, Nick, you know, there's some parts of you when you work with somebody so long, you don't dislike them, but you feel stale. Now, I don't think this is what happened with there, but I think there was some excitement for Nick to say, like, hey, we've been running this style of offense for a couple of years. Let's bring in something different, and let's get a guy who's going to be something
that's
totally different.
I may be wrong, but I don't buy that for a second.
When you hear Hurt say the offense is 95% different, doesn't that make it sound like Nick said, hey, put your stuff in, man. This is your offense now.
Oh no, he definitely. But that's my.
So
that's
you're saying problem. He's doing that like apprehensively.
Oh hell yeah, he loves his offense. And why wouldn't he? He won. I don't know.
I coach on a very low level, and I'm getting older, and I have a young guy that coaches with me. And I used to be the emperor at practice where it was only my stuff. And now I'm like, hey, what do you want to do next? I'm at the point where I become
trusting. I'm not saying it's not possible. It's possible to have evolution. That's a good example. Most coaches do. But this guy's a very young coach that had a ton of success and had a dry spell. And if you go back to the first dry spell when his first year as a head coach, and they started 2-5, and the sky was falling, and people were saying he's going to be one and done, and he's going to be out of here, and he's a joke. You can go back to those press conferences, Mike, and he said, slamming the table. We're doubling down in what we believe in. We're tripling down in what we believe in. Your process, your theory, you got to stay. If you believe in it, you got to stick with it. That's Nick Sirianni. Unfiltered. He believes in himself. He should believe in himself. And now he's in a situation where, yes, it's Kellen Moore's offense. He's giving it over. That's been my problem since day one. Mm. This guy loves his offense. He was forced, whether it wasn't direct, and that's what I'm saying about Jeffrey, it was indirect. But I think this is set up for failure.
So essentially then, as I'm trying to read this again, because as I said, I wasn't at the press conference. I didn't see it. I just heard the quote. It feels like then the question is asked about Nick, and Jalen is essentially making it like the offense is coming from Kellen. Therefore, Nick is not involved. He has no relationship with Nick anymore. Other than he's the head coach of the team, but not really the guy in charge of me.
Well, yeah. And Nick's comments were, to me, the bigger deal. And if you go back and when you have some time, you can read Nick's transcript. And he said he just was bringing up names. And for some reason, he brought up Milton Williams. My relationship with Jalen's important. My relationship with Milton Williams is just as important. And Clint Hurt, he mentioned. and Howie mentioned, they're just as important. Well, Howie probably is, but Clint Hurt, Milton, come on. Is Sean McVay, I use Sean McVay, and I love Milton. This is not an insult. And I said this yesterday. Sean McVay had Aaron Donald, one of the greatest players of all time. His relationship as an offensive head coach with his quarterbacks, Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford, was more important than his relationship with Aaron Donald. That's just how this works.
Sure.
Well,
is it essentially coach speak to say all my guys are as important as the next guy, knowing quite well that the quarterback is the most important guy in every room?
It's definitely coach speak, but it's true here in that he's not spending every waking moment of every day with Jalen Hurts anymore. And he has untethered himself from the starting quarterback. I don't like that setup. I don't like that setup. To me, Jeffrey.
All right. Well, then the question, the peel of the onion to that is, has he untethered himself out of circumstance or because they don't get along?
Out of circumstance.
Okay. Does that make everybody feel better then? Or still, you know what I mean? Like, out of circumstance, he is letting the guy do his job. So I'm going to back off and not be on top of this Kellen Moore. Let him do his job.
Well, they still have their... this is my my problem is, again, it was not an implicit order. It was an inferred order. So the relationship was fractured by an inferred order by those above him.
Did Nick say he picked Kellen Moore?
And that's what I'm trying to say. Nick did pick Kellen Moore. Nick hires the coaches. All of this is true. But again, he's a political animal. He understands what needed to be done. So I'll boil it down to this, Mike.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Lurie should have fired him or kept him. And if he kept him, which he did, he's allowed to do what he wants as the head coach of this team. He's essentially not allowed to do what he wants. He won't admit it. But again, if I wish people could be in some of these discussions we've had, I find it very hard to believe this guy woke up one day and said, you know what? My offense isn't good enough. I find that very, very hard to believe.
Yeah, I think there is some oddity to saying, let's just scrap what we've been doing. Unless he's, look, what do we call them? The Captain Pander. I mean, was he wearing a British
T-shirt? Pander in chief. Yeah. No, he had a Phillies hat on. He had a Phillies hat.
Did it have a London like flag on it?
I didn't check. I didn't look.
So he obviously knows his surroundings. I mean, he is a pretty smart guy. I don't know. Is he at a point where he realizes, is he smart enough? If he's smart enough to see everything around him, is he also smart enough to realize that my offense is getting stale? I know that's a lot of pride. Do we not want to give guy enough credit for having enough pride to see that?
It's possible. It's possible.
Does it have any effect, though, on the overall locker room? I mean, when they asked Jalen Hurts, okay, what is Nick doing? He's like, smiled, laughed, chuckled, and then he goes, he's bringing a good message to the team. Like, how can you retain the locker room of grown professionals who are playing a sport when you get rid of your responsibilities? Now, you guys might be right. Maybe that's what Nick wanted to do. Maybe he evolved as a coach and he's like, I can't do all this crap anymore. Let me get Kellen Moore, call my offense. Vic Fangio, call my defense. Let me be the coach of this thing.
Well, I'd like to ask this question. I'd like to ask this question then. What did he do when Shane Steichen was here? Was he all over Jalen? Was he all involved? Or did Shane Steichen run the offense and run the practices in a similar way that Kellen Moore will? So that Jalen might just be like, he's doing what he always does. He has a positive message. He keeps everybody together. He's the guy that we all look to. Did Shane Steichen, Brian Johnson to some extent, did they have Nick Sirianni ahead of them at practice running stuff, or did the coordinators run those practices as well?
It was his offense. I mean, completely his offense.
And his offense, but was he running it at practice, or were the coordinators the ones?
Well, the coordinators, but he's very involved in practice. I mean, to the point where, you know, when he first got here, I joked that he was the receivers coach because he spent so much time with the receivers. So he goes where he needs to go, which I don't think is a bad thing. And I assume that will continue.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
But no, ostensibly, Shane Steichen and Brian Johnson would run the offense as the play caller during practice. But everybody knew, and that's where I go back, you know, he had a famous quote talking about his quote with Milton Williams. And I go back to this all the time, Mike. He said, I don't care if it's Howie, Jeffrey, Mike Gill, I'm making it up, Xander Kraus. This is my offense. This will be my offense as long as I'm here. Flat out said it. And this is that went moving from Shane to Brian.
Is that in a utopian term? Like, this is my offense because I'm the head coach. Does it matter whether it's my playbook or not? It's still my offense because I'm the head coach.
It was his offense because he's the head coach, but he said it would always be his offense as long as he's the head coach. It now no longer is. Again, you can't close the door on evolution, as you pointed out, and maybe he just woke up one day and had an epiphany. But I've known this guy long enough to know I don't think that happened, and we'll see how it shakes out. But I think Jeffrey Lurie should have been, you know, rewinding this whole thing from the start. All right, if you got a problem, just move on. But if you're going to keep him, let him run.
I think a lot of people are on that, agree with that. Like, hey, if you thought there was going to be any issues, like I said, I don't think Nick deserved to be fired, but I thought making the change to Patricia, if it was in fact his, I went to front office and said, let's make this change, that change blew up so like blew up your whole in your face so bad that it essentially, I'm imagining Brandon Graham is making some reference that coaches were in the wrong place. They didn't have the right guys going on, which is something that we had on our show months ago. We played the audio. He was on the radio. This wasn't new news that Brandon said this. This is the second time he has said this, by the way. And I had said, I don't think he deserved to be fired, but if you fired him and said that decision was so poor that I've now lost faith in the way that your decision making, I would have no problem with that. If you identified that decision as so bad, which it was, that's the reason why we had to move on because we've lost faith in your decision making, fine. That said, I didn't think he deserved to be fired. He took the team to the Super Bowl. He's been to the playoffs three straight years. Is part of why they kept him because of how he's able to kind of change and evolve and do things on the fly. The first year he was here, they're throwing the ball all over the place. Like they've got Joe Montana and Jerry Rice. Hey, we're not that team. Let's run the ball. They changed in the middle of the year because they realized what they weren't. Okay. Last year, why couldn't they make the adjustments? Don't know. But is that something to say because he couldn't, they didn't get it done last year, you're now fired? Or do they say, look, this guy has done enough. Look at Roseman. How many mistakes has he made? Yet, how many good things has he done? You're not going to do everything right. So I think the Eagles looked at Sirianni as a guy who could be a steady influence for them that the players like. They like playing for him. They know that he has their back. Yet, their biggest success was when their coordinators were the stronger voices in their respective rooms. And it looks like they went back to that formula with strong coordinators and let Nick kind of be the overseer that everybody gets along with. And that's not a bad thing, is it?
No, that's a good point too, Mike. I mean, that I like the point there. Now, I guess it's fair to wonder if the only reason they kept him is because of how bad it would look to fire Doug a couple years after the Super Bowl and then fire Nick a couple years after the Super Bowl. You don't want to get that, but let's move on from Nick Sirianni. I want to talk to you about the defensive backs, the coordinators. Sorry, I got some lawn work going outside. I'm not sure if that's coming through my mic or not, but a lot of talk about the young CBs at camp. What did you make of it? I know I don't want to get too high on them just yet, but a lot of competition, I guess you could say, in that room.
No doubt. So let me ask this question. When I was here last, I was here last Wednesday, I think, right? Yeah. We talked about Bradberry playing safety. What happened the rest of the week? Was he injured and not participate, or did he stay in the safety room?
No participation whatsoever. Okay. So.
All right. Because I was perplexed at why they would move him to safety without even giving him a shot. Now, so if he was not in the corner room and you had all the rest of those guys, Rogers, Mitchell, Ricks, Job, DeJean, I'm still very interested to see what they do with Bradberry. Is he still here? Is he gone? Is he moving solely to safety? To me, I'm interested if I'm Vic Fangio. I had a guy who played in this system 2 years ago. He was very good. He was an all-pro level player, playing a very similar style. I want to see him there. And if he can't play, let me be the guy that makes that decision. And I was very surprised about that. Now, the rest of that room, you're almost to the point where it's so crowded that you almost have to think about trading somebody, right? I mean, you would almost say, look, Isaiah Rogers is getting all this buzz, but we just don't have any snaps for him. Maybe somebody else wants him and we can, you know, get something there. We have all these young guys that everybody seemingly likes. Will somebody take a shot on a young corner? Because we just don't have any stats for him. I don't know how you keep – some of those guys have got to go, and I would imagine they don't want to just get rid of them for nothing. So there could be a lot of, potential moves with that secondary room that brings in some pieces that they're still lacking. Because that's another thing we're looking at. Where are they still lacking? I think the third wide receiver spot, the linebacker room. Can they use some of that cornerback room to get help elsewhere? Because you can't keep that whole room intact like that, even though they like a lot of those guys.
Yeah, somewhat. Howie's been somewhat famous for the player for player August trade. Some of them people forget about, like Eli Harold or somebody like that. Joel Green Beckham was player for player for Dennis Kelly back in the day.
That was a good one.
Yeah, there've been quite a few of them. Jordan Matthews, I think he was player. I forget, but I'd have to look. So there've been quite a few of them, and there are a couple positions, wide receiver. When you look at Paris Campbell, John Ross, as the potential wide receiver three, or somebody from outside the building, where would you go, Mike, if those are the two options?
Well, Ross, we certainly haven't seen enough of. We're going to have to get him to training camp and see what happens in that mix. Reports seem to be that he looked pretty good, like at least that he can compete, right? Paris Campbell seemingly was the clear number three. At this stage of the game, you have the Smith. I guess he's healthy. There's no problems with Anaya Smith there. So those would be the three candidates. It seemed
well, except that the problem with Anaya is he keeps dropping the damn football. He's turning into Shelton Gibson, your old buddy from West Virginia. Poor Shelton couldn't catch the football.
So that could be an area where I don't think there's a guy on the street. But we go back to the cornerback room, player for player. Can you find a guy that you can say, hey, this makes sense. You need a corner. We could use some depth at that position. And there's your flip right there. So I would think that there's somebody from outside the organization at wide receiver that's still in the mix because they had a guy that obviously didn't work out for him, ends up retiring. So it's seemingly that they need someone still, or they had plans for someone still to be in that room. So that would be, to me, something out, to answer your question, would be something outside the organization that they're still probably kind of figuring out or scouting other teams. Where's a team that needs a corner and has some depth at wide receiver with a guy that we like?
See, a guy like Eli Ricks in that scenario or Josh Job, I'll entertain that trade scenario. But do you think Howie Roseman, who's a pretty forward-thinking GM, is going to move on from a 26 in Isaiah Rodgers' case, a 22 in Kelee Ringo's case, one of these young corners with a lot of potential to keep Slay? I mean, Slay's 33. Everybody's like, keep Slay. They were the 31st ranked pass defense in the NFL last year. You can't get worse than that, basically. You basically can't go down. So if you move on from him, you rip the Band-Aid off, you let these young guys play. Like, I just don't see how we move in a young guy like that who has future potential when you have a year left with Slay, tops.
Yeah, well, I think it might have been here last week. I don't remember 100%, but, you know, you draft Mitchell and Cooper, and essentially it's a situation that you had with Bobby Taylor and Troy. You draft two guys, and they kind of sat, and then they were gone. This will be Bradbury, just might not be here this year, and one of the guys might get a lot of time this year. And the other guy will essentially take over for Slay next year, you would assume. The question would be, after this year, who else is rest of that group? Because, again, you have Cooper and Mitchell. You would imagine they're your two corners for the next 8 to 10 years, you're hoping, right? 7 to 10 years. And then that third guy, is it Rodgers? Is it Ringo? Is it Ricks? Is it Job? It might be one or two of them, but you can't keep five of them, right? I mean, so essentially one of those guys. No, I agree with what you're saying. He doesn't want to give up a young corner, but he also has to realize, I don't want to play, and I might have a need somewhere else. Now, that doesn't mean you trade him for, you know, a guy like Julio Jones. You know, it's just an old guy in another camp that just needs to get out. I know he was released last year, and he was a, but I'm just saying, you don't trade him for a veteran of that ilk. You try to find a team that has a stockpile of wideouts and maybe make that kind of flip.
Yeah. And you got to trade back. You're not getting anything for Eli Ricks or Josh Job. You're just not. So, you know, if it would be player for player, and they certainly don't want to trade Ringo, you know, maybe you sell high on Isaiah Rodgers. You sign him for $1 million. You wait a year. He balls out in the spring. Everybody thinks he's Deion Sanders, and boom, take advantage of it. But to your point, Xander, they ain't trading Darius Slay. Darius Slay is their best corner by 1 million miles.
Yeah, but their best
point.
Corner, John, resulted in the 31st ranked pass defense. My point is, if that's your
best, they would have been 36 without Darius Slay, and there's 32 teams. That's how bad they were everywhere else.
My point
else.
Is, though, if he's on the roster and he was your best corner.
And by the way, he's your best corner, and he's got no value because he's 33 and he makes a lot of money.
Well,
so you're not getting anything back for him anyway.
I mean, I think there's a Robert Quinn deal to be had for Slay.
Yeah, but that's a deal that gets made. That's a deal that gets made
at the trade deadline. Any season.
Yeah, yeah, that's a deal that gets made at the trade deadline if your season has gone bonkers, yeah. Like, you know, where you're hoping it, like a Kevin Byard. You're a veteran player who has a track record, and that team is not making the playoffs, and you decide it's time to move on. Let's go look at the young players. It's not going to happen in training camp where this team thinks they have Super Bowl aspirations, and they think they have Super Bowl aspirations because they have Darius Slay in that secondary.
Yeah. I get it. I do struggle with the 31st stat, though. I mean, look, I'm with you where I'm like, why would you get rid of Slay right now? You don't want to get rid of Slay when you're trying to go back and compete for a Super Bowl. But shit, the pass defense sucked. It sucked.
Well, part of the 31st is James Bradberry, who essentially doesn't look like he's going to be a part. Kevin Byard, who's no longer here. The other safety, Edmonds, who they traded to get Byard. He was part of that. So they have a lot of guys who have been replaced that were a part of that 31st. I think what John's saying is Slay was part of the reason why they weren't even worse than they were. And some of the guys who were a part of why they were so bad have been replaced with Quinion Mitchell, Dijon Cooper, CJ Gardner-Johnson. Now, Mitchell and Cooper are both rookies. I don't know. Are you expecting those guys to both come in and be starting capable players right off the bat? I know fans all hope, but sometimes that's you're asking two young guys to step in and help a team go from 31 up the ladder. That's tough. You need sometimes a veteran guy in there to kind of be a part of that. And again, if the season goes awry, I think what you're saying is right. They probably call and say, hey, four
but
and
even
five.
Then, you're getting a day three pick. I mean, yeah. Because of his age, because of
and that
money.
Means worst case scenario for the Eagles, by the way.
Yeah. They're a terrible team.
Yeah. If you're at the situation where we're in October, I guess that's when the trade deadline is, sometime in October, and you're talking about having to trade Darius Slay, your season did not go very well at that moment in time.
No.
I can't imagine they're not in a wild card mix.
Neither can I.
The trade deadline.
Yeah, no, they're going to be. Come on, they're not.
I moved it back a week, but it's still early November. At Mike Gill Show, follow Mike on X 2-6. The Sports Bash 97.3. He's back from London, and he's working hard. Much appreciated, Mike. I know you got to have some jet lag.
I thought I'd be worse. I actually woke up at 6:45. I went to bed at a normal time. I think I might be. When I came home from Vegas, the Super Bowl, I was wiped out. I was wiped out for 2 to 3 days. So I thought I was going to have it rough coming back here, but I seem to be okay.
Iron Mike, baby. Iron Mike Gill. Thanks for joining us, Mike. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. All right, man.
See you guys.
Thanks, bud.
There's Mike Gill joining us on Birds 365. Good stuff from Mike Gill. We're going to take a break and we're going to come back. I'm going to stay in the cornerback room with Johnny Mack. I want to talk about this, John, because I get it. I get it.
Yeah, you're pushing this Slay thing. It ain't happening.
No, I'm not pushing it. I'm wondering if Howie, who's a forward-thinking general manager.
There's no value to it. You got a high-level.
There's value in it for the future of the Eagles. If you rip that Band-Aid off, you give these young guys a lot of reps, you're not going to get worse than you were last year anyway.
Well, you got it. You got to get better. Although all the Gannon haters, you can't be any worse than having the number one passing defense.
It hasn't been a good last year for the Gannon haters. And I was,
but to the point about Slay, he's still a high level player. But and we're Reddick is another example of this. We talked about it. The league isn't fair to veteran players, post 30 players. Slay still playing at a Pro Bowl level, by far the best cornerback on the team. You think you're a Super Bowl contender, you're not getting value in back for him anyway. I mean, there's no even thought, inkling of trading this player. Now, as Mike pointed out, if the season goes awry, yeah, at the trade deadline, I'll be all on board. If you can get a day three pick and then get rid of the startup costs for Quinion Mitchell, whether he's playing or not by that point. Maybe it's Ringo. Maybe it's Cooper. You know, speed that process up. Yeah, but that's a thought for later, and your hope is that you're a significant contender and it never comes up.
Yeah, I get it. I really do. I get all sides of it, but I can't help but wonder if, I mean, especially when you hear Mike saying, oh, maybe trade Isaiah Rodgers. I get it, and you're right.
I
paid $1 million for the guy, and now you're
going to. No, I said if you want something of value.
It's a quick.
Because you're not getting, I'm talking about a potential player for player trade. You're not getting a big-time prospect at wide receiver, linebacker, safety for Josh Jobe, who's a special teams player, or Eli Ricks, who, he's got some coverage ability, but again, he didn't perform well in the spring, and he's probably going to get cut anyway. You're not getting a lot of value back for that. Could you get something? Yes, But if you're looking for something meaningful, and I don't know if you can get something meaningful for Rodgers because he's coming off. Everybody had a chance, remember, but he did play well in the spring. I'm saying maybe because you have 14 corners, maybe you sell high and say, oh, we can get a guy who's a relevant receiver or a relevant linebacker or something like that. Very unlikely. So please don't write aggregate stories that McMullen said they're going to trade Isaiah Rodgers. I'm just saying he's a good player. And you might be able to get some value because you have so much depth at the cornerback position, whereas you're not going to get much back for a special teams player or a guy who, you know, had a great pick six against a fourth string quarterback in an exhibition game.
Yeah, and then I guess if it would depend on the valuation of the other guys. If they think Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean, and Keely Ringo are going to be your future, then, yeah, I guess you realistically could consider moving on from Isaiah Rodgers. I just, a young guy like that, when he gives you depth at cornerback position, he's panned out better than most were thinking he was going to pan out, at least to this point. Boy, I'll tell you what, Johnny Mac, if they did get some value for Isaiah Rodgers, I don't want to hear anymore that minicamp doesn't matter, Johnny Mac.
Yeah, well, and that's part of the point. You know, you sell high.
Yeah,
right. You don't sell low. Stock market 101, and if he's not going to have a relevant role because those guys have hit the ground running, he'd be the guy that maybe can get you back some value. Again, though, I shouldn't even have said it. It's not likely. They're not looking to do it. But when I look at that cornerback room, that's the one guy you may not need that may have some value.
They're going to have to do something there, though. I mean, they're going to end up either cutting somebody or trading somebody. Well, and the reason I brought up Eli Ricks is because he brought up Eli Ricks as a potential trade candidate. But I think you're right. I don't know what you're not getting back probably much for a guy like that.
You might get back at day three conditional pick. I'm talking about player for player value.
Which doesn't happen much in the NFL.
No, but Howie's done it quite a bit. Most of them haven't panned out, but he's done it quite a bit. And if you look at contracts don't tell you everything, but they tell you a lot. And for all these people that are penciling Paris Campbell in, they paid him, you know, $1.125 million. John Ross, same thing. Even Zach Bond, a lot of people are penciling Zach Bond now. I just wrote a piece about Nakobe's going to be back and he's going to get every opportunity. He might not win the job because he might not perform, but he's going to get every opportunity to win the job. They paid Zach Bond $1.6 million. You hear $3.5, that's with incentives. They paid him $1.6 million. Doesn't tell you everything, but if you want to use Penn to put Zach Bond in there, just be very, very wary.
I kind of feel the same about Nakobe Dean, though. I mean, they used a third-round pick on the guy, and have the Eagles seen a lot from Nakobe Dean that they're penciling him at one? I don't really get why everybody, you, other reporters who have been on the show, they're like, everybody is telling me that Nakobe
Dean is going to be the guy. Because they like Nakobe Dean. Again, everything is about evaluation. Yes, they drafted him. They've done all the homework on him. Yes, he's not a proven player. And I get why people don't believe in him. And when he was out there, he didn't look great last year. But the Eagles believe in him, and they believe he has a higher ceiling than any other linebacker on this team. Are they right? Maybe not. I'm not saying they're right. I'm saying that's what they believe. And if he's healthy,
you could apply that same logic to the cornerback room. I believe that my young guys have a higher ceiling than 33-year-old Slay does.
Well, there's a big difference between six-time Pro Bowler Darius Slay.
Yeah, but he's 33. This isn't prime Darius Slay.
Well, he made the Pro Bowl last season. And not that that's everything, but he still played at a high level. And I'm not saying, I'm one of the first one that says You just because you're a star doesn't mean you're a star forever. Darius still played at a high level last season. And I know that's hard for people to understand because they had the 31st ranked passing defense, but it wasn't because of him. And the Eagles know that, and the Eagles want him, and the Eagles plan for him. And that's the thing. You plan, you have a plan in mind. Darius Slay's part of their plan. N'Kobe Dean's part of their plan. Is it going to work out? That's a different conversation. But those guys are part of their plan on defense.
I get it. I'm itching to see the young guys. I think it'd be worth it for the team, especially if you're trying to build a team that's around for, you know, a long time. We haven't had we could use some young, good players at that position, and I would hate to see them trade one of the young guys. But we'll take a quick commercial timeout. We have Brandon Lee Gatlin coming up in 5 minutes. This will be our last break before BLG. We'll talk to BLG on the other side. I want to thank everybody for being in the chat. We appreciate all of you guys. Screwface, Slagger, SMD Eagles, Amwan, we appreciate all of you guys. Make sure you drop a like on the show and keep it right here on Birds 365. BLG coming up next.
If you missed any of today's show on the Jacob Media channel, listen to the podcast on your way home. Available on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify.